Manuscript Releases, Volume 15. Mr. Number 1145. Productivity of the Soil at Avondale. Workers for God must be thoroughly converted and be one with Christ. Audio. I received your letter giving the particulars regarding your grounds and the cultivation of certain lines of fruit. While we were in Australia, we adopted the very plan you speak of, digging deep trenches and filling them in with dressing that would create good soil. This we did in the cultivation of tomatoes, oranges, lemons, peaches, and grapes. The man of whom we purchased our peach trees told me that he would be pleased to have me observe the way they were planted. I then asked him to let me show him how it had been represented in the night season that they should be planted. I ordered my hired man to dig a deep cavity in the ground, then put in rich dirt, then stones, then rich dirt. After this he put in layers of earth and dressing until the hole was filled. I told the nurseryman that I had planted in this way in the rocky soil in America. I invited him to visit me when these fruits should be ripe. He said to me, "You need no lesson from me to teach you how to plant the trees." Our crops were very successful. The peaches were the most beautiful in coloring, and the most delicious in flavor of any that I had tasted. We grew the large yellow Crawford and other varieties, grapes, apricots, nectarines, and plums. A member of Parliament who came to Corinbong occasionally, and who had purchased the house in which we first lived in Corinbong, visited our garden and orchard, and was greatly pleased with it. Several times we filled a large basket with fruit and took it to him and his wife at their home, and they were profuse in their thanks. After this they would always recognize us on the cars, and speak of the great treat they had had in the fruit from our orchard. When they would visit us at our farm, they were always at liberty to eat all they wanted from the garden, and usually carried away a basket of fruit to their home. These favors brought us returns in several ways. Mention was made in the papers of the work being done by the students on the Avondale estate. And years afterward, when the terrible drought came, and the cattle were dying for want of pasture and food, the papers spoke of the wonderful exception to the drought to be found on the Avondale tract of land. They compared it to an oasis in the desert. Our crops were not cut off, and the farm flourished remarkably, notwithstanding the lack of rain. When we were investigating the land at Corinbong, our brethren held off from purchasing for a whole year, thinking to find in some other locality land that would compare well with the rich soil of Iowa. This they finally decided could not be found. But the work was hindered for a whole year because some of the brethren had not the faith to move forward in spite of the discouraging appearances. In the night season a representation had been given me that revealed this lack of faith. I seemed to be on the Avondale land, and while the horses were breaking away through the forest, I walked in an open space close to where our school buildings now stand. I saw a furrow made in the soil 1 foot deep and about 4 in length. Two of the brethren stood at the furrow, one at each end. They were examining the soil, and declaring it to be of no value. But one stood by who said, "You have misjudged the worth of this land." He then explained the value of the different strata in the soil, and their uses. When we came to Avondale to examine the estate, I went with the brethren to the tract of land. After a time we came to the place I had dreamed of, and there was the furrow that I had seen. The brethren looked at it in surprise. "How had it come there?" they asked. Then I told them the dream that I had had. "Well," they replied, "you can see that the soil is not good." "That," I answered, "was the testimony borne by the men in my dream, and that was given as the reason why we should not occupy the land." But one stood upon the upturned furrow, and said, "False testimony has been borne concerning this soil. God can furnish a table in the wilderness." The 1,500 acres were purchased. The marshland had to have considerable attention in order to drain off the water. But when this was done, even this part was found to be valuable. The crops that the land yielded proved the truth of the words of the messenger. But the lack of faith that was manifested in taking up the work cost us the loss of time and means. The Lord knows what is best for His work. That which was, as it were, a hiding place in the wilderness has proved to be a profitable tract of land. And we have learned that if we would have a rich experience in our Christian life, we must let the Lord direct. Well, all this is in the past. It is 7 years since we returned to America. I know that all who would have success in the work must tarry long with God. The story is told of an old Lancashire woman who was listening to the reasons that her neighbors gave for their minister's success. They spoke of his gifts, of his style of address, of his manners. "Nay," said the old woman, "I will tell you what it is. Your man is very thick with the Almighty. We need to keep our eye single to the glory of God. Our fitness for His service will be found in constant communion with Him. God's messengers must tarry long with God if they would have success. When men consecrate themselves to God, the power which comes alone from God will bring them definite results in their work. We are to act as in the presence of God. His eye is ever upon us. His arm is guiding us. We must die to self before God can use us to His name's glory. If we will learn of Christ as His little children, we shall make a success wherever we are. The workers in our publishing houses need to have their intellects converted. The physicians and nurses in our sanitariums need to experience the daily converting power of God. Our ministers need to know that Christ is an indwelling presence with them. Some of our workers have cherished their inherited and cultivated tendencies to wrong, and this has led them to try to bear rule over one another. Repentance and daily conversion from wrongdoing is not a part of their experience. These souls are as verily the enemies of Christ as are those who have never yielded themselves to Him. The testimony comes to such, Romans 12 verses 1-13, quoted. This chapter is full of cautions and exhortations. Let us study it prayerfully that we may understand what are the gifts to the church which make it the light of the world. We are to walk and work in a spirit of humility and in self-control. One is our master, even Christ. The history of the past, in which man has been led to seek the guidance of the human mind, is not to be repeated. There are those who suppose that they are set to guard the actions of their brethren and sisters, and if these souls step out of the line that they have marked out, they think that they must put on the restricting line. Oh, what a farce this is! Such a course is not after God's order. He invites, "In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths." Let no human agency seek to outline the duty of his fellows, or to force his opinions upon another, lest he get in the way of the Lord's counsel. The workers need to study the life of Christ until they give themselves unreservedly to Him. "It is the Spirit that quickeneth," He said. "The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, and they are life." Those who practice the words of Christ become one with Christ. Their lives represent the pure principles of the Word in simplicity and meekness. The Apostle Paul declared, 1 Corinthians 2 verses 1-10, quoted,